We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Can I talk football here for a minute? Let's talk Bears, okay?
Dave Wannstedt.
Dave Wannstedt has guided his Bears to the playoffs, and he knows what it takes to succeed.
NFL head coach for 11 years.
The Bears came in here, and Dave Wannstedt, there's a happy group of overachievers that have been well coached.
College football national champion.
A superb game plan defensively by the Miami Hurricanes.
The party has begun in Miami.
Super Bowl champion.
They swarmed to the ball so incredibly. This speed-burning defense, number one in the NFL. Dave Wannstedt, the defensive coordinator.
Football analyst for Fox Sports and NBC Sports Chicago.
What's in that glass you were sipping on?
You know what? I'm not telling anybody. It was a glass of iced tea. Okay, how's that? That's TV talk, you know? Iced tea.
Dave Wannstedt.
You guys want to hear something funny?
When I'm coaching, right, everyone's calling me a moron. Now I get a microphone in front of me, everyone calls me an expert.
With Danny Parkins on 670 The Score.
With Will Perdue in, it's some of our favorite time of the week. Dave Wannstedt, twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. He hangs out with us even during Bears bye week. You got some iced tea, Coach?
You know what? Will, my friend, how you doing?
I'm doing good. You know, we need to do this show or do your bit from your favorite Italian restaurant, my friend.
Well, you know what I'm doing? I didn't want to have bourbon tonight, Danny boy. Look, check. So I didn't want to think Will was, I didn't want to insult Will. So I'm having something light, little Bloody Mary tonight. You know, I thought the bourbon, I'm usually on Terry Bradshaw bourbon this time of night, you know? But
this time of night, it's 5 p.m.
Like, 5 o'clock somewhere.
Well, I do not have a drink. 5 o'clock is when it starts. So this is it. This is my first one. I've taken two sips.
Okay. Okay.
Look, Bloody Mary.
Yeah,
okay?
I believe you. That's your, that's your
hold
first
on,
one.
Danny. Coach, you let me down. I mean, we've had a talk all day about Danny's Moscow Mule against my old fashioned. So I think I know what side of the fence you're on.
Yes. Yeah, this is soft, I know, but I don't know. I just didn't want to go over the top tonight. I thought I'd back off a little bit. You know, it's a bye week. How's that? It's a bye week, so I'm going to have a nice Bloody Mary rather than my hard 103-proof Terry Bradshaw bourbon. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me. Dave, I got to be honest with you. I'm happy it's a bye week. I can watch good football for a change. I don't have to watch the Bears. This is going to be very enjoyable starting tonight. We don't even have to talk about the Bears if you don't want to.
Well, no, I want to talk about the Bears. I want to talk about the Bears getting better. Look at my glass, okay? Would you look at this? It's half full. It's not half empty. And that's my attitude with the Bears. The glass is half full. We got to get it corrected. I don't want to – you're rubbing your head. Am I giving you a headache?
Well, you believe what you're saying?
No. You know,
no.
we got the bye week, and I would, you know, obviously they're looking at the self, Scott, and they're going through everything that they got to correct. But at the end of the day, the area to me, everybody wants to talk about Nick Foles or we're not running the ball, and they're all issues, no question. But they got to do something to help that offensive line, and whether it be it when they're throwing the ball, they got to help those guys. When they're running the ball, they got to help those guys, and it's not that hard. You've just got to commit that you're not going to get, you know, four receivers out every time or five receivers out, and you're going to leave some people in to block, and it makes a huge difference. Tom Brady has his best days when he's got an extra tight end or two in there blocking for him. I mean, it's just that to me is the biggest issue right now. Address how we're going to help the offensive line. You're not going to get new players. What we have is what we have. But we can find ways to help these guys that gives our team a better chance to win.
Okay, so like what? So keeping tight ends in the block, right?
Absolutely.
Jimmy Graham's not helping. But like what other ways are there to help out this offensive line? Throw the ball fast.
No, protect.
Move the pocket.
How about, How about running the ball? Just put a tight end in there. Get somebody leading up on a linebacker, double team a couple guys, and hand the thing off about 40 times. I mean, you'll be shocked at the results. If you're making 3 yards a play, it's better than what they're doing now, minus 2 yards. Offense the whole third quarter? Are you kidding me? It's really not that hard. And then on passing situations, nothing makes a quarterback feel better about a play call or better about an opportunity to complete a pass than to know that he's going to have time to throw the pass. And right now, that's not happening. I mean, they put Ryan Nall in there in the backfield, and I'm watching the game, and I'm thinking to myself, they got it. He's going to stay in. They're giving somebody some help. They're going to be able to help on protection. And what's he do? He releases into the flat, and Foles gets hit in the mouth. I mean, it's not going to change if that's the approach they take.
But, Coach, how do you then – obviously, you're watching the game, and it's screaming to you on the offense of the field what they need to be doing. How is the quarterback then not seeing that and making the necessary alignments along with the line to prepare for that rush on a passing down?
You got to have the right people in the game that are capable of doing that, Will. You got to have the tight end. You got to have Ryan Nall. When you put those guys in there, they shouldn't be in there to catch passes. I mean, maybe in some offenses, maybe with Aaron Rodgers you can. But the situation we're in right now, what do we got to do to put our thumb in the dike and stop the leak? And to me, it's the offensive line. You got to help these guys a little bit. You know, that we got some guys hurt. We got some players in there that don't have that much experience. I don't know. I mean, I lost a couple jobs because I was too conservative, but I guarantee you we ran the damn football and we threw some play action passes now and we weren't very good on offense, but we find a way.
But are you saying, Coach, that it's as simple as just run the football, or can you be more specific? How do you help these guys that they have there?
If you put a tight end and a fullback in there, you got two more blockers to run the ball. If you put a tight end and a fullback in there, you got two more people that can block. Right now, they line up with four, and they bring one linebacker, and it's 5-on-5. We're not good enough right now to handle 5-on-5. We don't have enough time to throw the ball. We've got to get an advantage. The only advantage we can get is numbers. Numbers. I remember playing a game. We were playing the Cowboys. I was at the Dolphins. And the Dallas Cowboys, Mike Zimmer was the defensive coordinator. Bill Parcells was the head coach. And they were leading the league in defense, and they were blitzing like 55, 60% of the time. And we were going down there on a Thanksgiving day, a Thursday, to watch. You probably watched the game, Danny. Probably laying on your couch, you watched the game.
Probably
and we
did.
Went down. You probably did. You probably just anxiously awaiting for the Clemson game to come on Saturday. But we're getting ready to play the Cowboys, and we're game planning that week. And Norv Turner was my offensive coordinator, and Norv says, "Dave," and we weren't bad, you know, Ricky Williams. We had some players, and Norv says, "Dave," he says, "we can't run our normal offense with a fullback helping out and block. You know, it was Rob Conrad, heck of a player, and run our offense. We're going to need to keep people in." I says, "How many do we got to keep in, Norv?" He says, "Well, I hate to tell you this, but I think we can only send two receivers out." I said, "So we're going to send two receivers out in passing situations, and everybody else is in blocking." He said, "That's what we got to do if we want to move the ball against these guys. They're good." So I said, "Do what we got to do. Check the score, okay? All I know is one of these game balls I got was presented to me that night. Big win for us. Big win, because we protected the Jay Fiedler, our quarterback, and our two receivers, Chris Chambers and a Rondé Gatson. They made plays. They got open. I don't know. It's
interesting, like, because I watched the NFL all day long on Sunday, right?
Right, right, right.
I don't see any team doing what you're talking about. Maybe Cleveland a little bit. But they've got two of the best running backs in the NFL. Like, is there an example in 2020 of what you're talking about?
Last week, Tom Brady, what was his comment after the game? When we have these two tight ends in here, I feel so much better and I am so much more effective when we run the ball and throw the ball. I don't know. Does Tom Brady know anything? Maybe not.
Oh, I'm not saying that. Listen, Dave, obviously you've forgotten more about football than I know. That's not what I'm saying. But, I mean, no, I'll look it up. I mean, I bet you Brady had 35 pass attempts in that game.
What? That's right, because they brought those tight ends and a fullback in there, and they ran the ball. How about the Rams? Sean McVay, I think, is a heck of a football coach. After last year, after the first year, they were play action and running the ball, and then he said, I've had enough of this. And they came out this year, and their whole game plan, next time the Rams, watch their offensive attack. It's really simple, but it's very effective, and the quarterback at least gets a chance to throw the ball. Our guy's under stress the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, I just looked at it. I mean, Brady had 39 pass attempts in that game against Carolina.
Right.
And their offensive line is just so much better than the Bears. Like, you're right. I mean, Ronald Jones had a massive game. He had over 20 carries. He had that one run that was like 98 yards. But I just don't know that the Bears – like, if you say to me, it's Charles Leno, it's Alex Bars, it's Cody Whitehair, it's Jermaine Ifedi, it's Rashad Coward. That's two backups and a guy playing out of position in Coward and a guy in Bars who has very little experience. And then what, J.P. Holtz and Cole Kmet? Like, is your fullback and your tight end? Like, who are the names of the people that you're asking on the Bears to do what you're talking
Ryan
about?
Ryan Nall, Cole Kmet doesn't need to be running on catching passes. They got plenty of wide receivers that can do that. Get them in there and block. Will, let me ask Will, on defense or in basketball, playing offense or whatever, what do you do in a basketball situation if you're a little bit shorthanded and you got a couple guys that are struggling? Do you find a way to give them some help or just let them one-on-one with Michael Jordan? I don't know.
Oh, you definitely give them some help. You look to help, you know. Now, like you're talking about, a scheme we talk about, like, for example, if I'm guarding Hakeem Olajuwon,
you were a guy that needed help. So go ahead and talk about it. You can explain this perfectly well.
But so we would set up a plan that my job was to funnel him to the middle. That's one of the few guys you didn't want to go baseline. So you try to slow him down, funnel him to the middle where the help's coming from, so then that they can drop down in his lap, double team, and force him to give up the basketball. And then the other guys have to rotate properly, and the guy coming out of the double has to sprint out of the double, not jog out of the double, sprint out of the double. So we used to call it everybody's on a string, all five guys. One guy moves, the other four guys move. It's you know, you have to rely on one guy. Tom Thibodeau used to talk about it's not the first effort, the second effort, it's the fourth and fifth effort that helps keep defenses alive, helps keep the play alive. And is that what you're referring to?
Well, yes. I mean, somehow you got to address the problem and not be not say that, we just got to drop new plays. That's all I'm saying. You know, yes,
but
exactly.
But how difficult is it then? Because we had a saying with the Bulls, too smart is dumb. How difficult is it for a coach to not get too creative and pull the reins back a little bit and said, hey, let's make the playbook smaller and look to run specific plays that I know we can at least accomplish. Even if it's only four plays the whole game, force them to stop us.
That's a great point. And let me tell you, let me give you an example. When I learned this when I was at the University of Miami, and we had three or four first rounders up front, you know, we were winning basically every game. We lost the whole time I was at Miami. We lost one regular season game the whole time. And we were good. We had a lot of great players. And I remember we were playing somebody, and I dialed up a couple blitzes. And we had two first rounders and two second rounders on the defensive line. And Jimmy Johnson got on the headset. And he said, Dave, don't get bored. I used that expression for 17 years as a head coach. On offense and on defense, I would walk into a room, and this is a good, this is interesting for our listeners. Let's say that we had 10 third down plays on the board that we liked against the Vikings last week. Okay, now we're getting ready to play Green Bay. And I walk in, obviously they've got a little bit different defense. So now our guys are on the board, you know, the old expression, whoever has the chalk last wins. They're all, and I'm sitting there and they would say, well, this works and this works. And I says, good. What plays are you going to eliminate? Because we're not going to have more than 10 on the board. Well, coach, but that was a good play for us. But I think this is a good play. I don't care what you say. I want 10 plays. You got to keep it manageable. And I don't see that. I mean, how many repeat plays do you really see with the Bears? You know what I mean? Over and over again. I don't know. It's what can you be really good at? What's your identity? And right now, the Bears are searching for that.
Okay, so when you watch this team then, put yourself in that position. You know the limitations that they have. What do they need to do, or should I say, what are they good at then offensively that gives them the best chance to move the ball and give themselves a chance to win the game? Because that seems to be the biggest problem.
You got to get the ball out quick, number one. You got to give quarterback time to throw the football. When you're throwing the ball and it's third down and eight, third down and nine, you got to hold the ball to make those completions. And the only way you're going to have manageable third downs is if you're throwing high percentage throws. Joe Montana, you know how many games he won? He never completed a pass over 20 yards to Jerry Rice. And then he let the receivers go. Allen Robinson, the Bears have some really good receivers. I mean, if you threw Patterson a quick 5-yard play in the flat, it would be interesting to see, because I think he's better running, obviously, in space than he is in the backfield. I mean, it's a whole different deal. You hand a guy the ball and he's got a defensive lineman 2 yards in front of him and you got to make a cut. That's a whole different mentality than running a kickoff back where a guy's 5 or 10 yards in front of you. You know, you can see the whole field. It's a different talent level. It's a different natural ability. Some guys got it, some guys don't. So, I mean, those... our listeners are going to go crazy, but what they were doing with Mitch Trubisky, for whatever reason, maybe because they were afraid Trubisky would screw it up, but when they were sprinting out and throwing in the flat and throwing those quick passes because they didn't want any changes, they were at least moving the ball. And there was a threat, you know, for Mitch to make a play on his feet. They made the change with Trubisky. And I think they've gone backwards, unfortunately. And it bothers me because I really thought that they might make a step forward.
Do you think Matt Nagy's a good coach?
I think he's great with the players. I thought it was a good thing when he turned the play calling over to another coach. But, you know, I was talking to Olin Krutz this weekend. And, you know, and he told me when Bill Lazor, and he's a good guy, when he was at Miami, the reason it didn't work out there – it was because he wouldn't commit to running the game. And Bill Parcells told me this a long time. When I first got the Bears job, we were at the combine. He says, who are you going to hire for your offensive coordinator? And I told him a couple guys. I ended up hiring Ron Turner. And he says, just remember this. All these offensive coordinators in the interview, they're all going to tell you how much they really believe in running the ball and why it's important. Very few of them believe it. Very few of them really believe it. Be careful. And I think that's the situation we're in, because I didn't see anything different with Bill Lazor. I'm sure that I was excited to see what he was going to do. I'm sure the fans were excited. I'm sure that the players in the locker room were excited. And it really looked like the same old thing.
You know what's interesting, Dave? Like, now that you're an analyst, I never hear any analysts say that this coach is bad. It never happens. I don't know if it's like a coaching fraternity thing, and it's not just football. Basketball, baseball, it never happens. You'll say that everybody's great, and players will be criticized, but, like, is there a bad coach in the NFL right now in your mind?
Is there a bad coach? Probably, but I'm not going to say who. No, I'm not going to do
that. It's just an interesting thing, like, because I don't know, because it just – you know,
I think you
six
can say
or eight of them get fired every year.
Yeah, I think you can say the guy's not getting the job done. You know, and I'm and we're talking about what's going on with the Bears that's not working.
Right.
You know, and then you got to make your own decisions. That's the way I look at it.
I want to talk to you about, you said you get fired for being too conservative. I want to talk about like how that manifests itself, because there's not a lot of that going on in coaching in 2020, where everything's, you know, people are throwing the ball all over the field. I mean, tonight there could be, this game could be played in the 70s between Seattle and Arizona. So we'll pick up the conversation. Will Perdue in on the Danny Parkin Show with Dave Wansta.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
On the score.
Dave Wannstedt with Danny Parkins. Eye test on 670 The Score.
And Will Perdue in on the Danny Parkin Show, where the segment is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Twitch.tv/Chicago67 to score is where you can watch. Myself, Will Perdue, and Dave Wannstedt have this conversation. Dave, you mentioned kind of offhand, like, you know, you got fired for being too conservative a few times. What were those conversations like? Is that something they explicitly told you, that you weren't doing enough offensively or too risk averse or whatever it was?
No, but I think fans love, and you know, the excitement. Obviously, that's why all the rule changes have happened in the NFL, is to try to help the offense score more points so that the games are exciting. Fans can get excited about their team. You like touchdowns. Everybody. I mean, you know, they don't enjoy the 10-6 games. I mean, it's a slow game, but a win's a win. I mean, and I guess being a defensive-minded coach, I was, if we had a third, I mean, I used to run the ball a lot on third down and five. And my thinking was that, you know, the defense is going to be thinking pass. We might get the first down, which we did a lot of times. And if it was fourth down and short, we could go for it again. And we were confident and we were good enough to run the ball to make 2 yards. So, you know, it wasn't just craziness. I mean, there was a philosophy. There was a belief in it. It was something that we worked on. And it really helped our defense. And in the back of my mind, I was always thinking our defense will be good enough to win low scoring games. And I think that has a lot to do with it.
So, Coach, you before we went to the break, you had mentioned about how Mitch would get out of the pocket and make some throws.
Yep.
So, depending, they've now lost four in a row. Something needs to change. And this is just coming from a former player. Sometimes the coach would mess with the lineup or do something. But, you know, right now when you talk to the team and the body language is not good. Eddie Jackson was talking about how guys have their heads down.
Right.
So, number one, my understanding is that players really like Mitch. So, number two, what type of momentum bump do you get if you put him into the starting lineup, you move him out of the pocket, and he has one of those things where he comes out of the pocket and you have a third and 12 and he completes the pass, or he runs down the field and slides for a first down? How does that change the mentality of the players, not only to start the game, but as soon as he makes a positive play?
Oh, 100%, Will. I think that the thing that Mitch was bringing to the table that I liked, and I know I got criticized here in Chicago because back in August, I was in the minority of people that said Mitch Trubisky should be the starter. And I said that Mitch, from a defensive standpoint, is Mitch going to throw it? We've seen him make nice throws, as many as Foles has this year, but we've seen Mitch scramble and make a first down. We've seen Mitch run the ball with the quarterback read offense and make plays. That's a lot more stress on a defense than what Nick Foles brings to the table. And so that was my thinking back in August. And, you know, Nick had 6 touchdowns and 3 interceptions, and they benched him, and Nick came in, and I respect Nick Foles. I mean, he's a great man. He's a good player, Super Bowl MVP. So I get all that. But I'm talking about today. what gives our football team the best chance to win today. And when you can't, you know, I always had my backup quarterback. You know, he was always had to be a athletic guy. And the thinking behind that was that he's not going to get as many plays as, in practice as a starter. So when he gets in, he better be able to make some things happen on his own. In other words, he better be able to get away from the rush and get out on the edge and maybe scramble and make a first down. And then that's kind of how Mitch is. I'm not saying Mitch is a frontline player. That's not what I'm saying at all. He hasn't proven that. I get that. But what we're doing right now, you need somebody else that can help make this offense go and give this offense, as you just said, Will, a little bit of spark. And when Mitch was in there starting, he was averaging, I think, 10 yards a game rushing. You might say, oh, my goodness, that's nothing. Well, guess what? They were averaging about 80, okay? And take a look at what's happening now. So he would make plays. I don't know. I just think that they need some excitement. They need a spark. They need that deep in those guys, and they're good people. And Chuck Pagano, the best thing they did was hire Chuck Pagano because, you know, Chuck's a former head coach. He sees the big picture. So he can keep these guys together, keep them together. And that's critical at this point because they're looking over there saying, okay, we changed coordinators. Where are we going with this, coach? I personally just think that Mitch brings you a spark that, and if he doesn't, he throws an incomplete pass or he gets sacked. What's the difference? That's where you're at right now. But I don't think that'll happen.
So, coach, I know we're really hammering on the offense, but I want to ask you a question about the defense because that's your specialty. And I know as a defensive coach, you kind of have to say, okay, this is what we're going to attack. This is what we're going to prevent. You kind of have to pick your poisons, right? Same thing as in basketball. Johnny Bock, who's a defensive coach, used to talk about we got to stop this first and foremost. You can't stop everything. But I was curious in that Vikings game, and I wrote this down. The underneath throw was open for Cousins all night, and it seems like the guys were late getting to it. Is that because there are so many options for Cousins that, we're going to constantly give up the underneath throw and then try to make the tackle before he gets to the first down? Because it seems like at times he made the underneath throw. Where's the line of defense? And then by the time they made the tackle, he had the first down.
Yeah, it was. And I think that they committed so much to the running game that they were going to get up there tight and stop the run. And Chuck Pagano's game plan all year long, and it was to not give up the big play. And the Bears have been one of the best in the league at that. Don't give up the big 40 or 50-yard touchdown, because if we do, guys, it's over. You know, if we fall behind by two scores, we're done. So I think that you got the back end guys playing the pass. I'm not going to give up the big play. And the linebackers and the guys inside against a guy with, you know, Dalvin Cook, one of the best running backs in the NFL. It was the same mentality as when they played the Titans with Derrick Henry. We got to stop the run. And when that happens, obviously that's going to open up those easy throws. And the Vikings did a good job. I mean, they did a nice job of play calling, and Kirk Cousins probably played as good. What it was, the 0-9 on Monday night games. He's never beaten the Bears. He played good that day.
Dave, I'm curious. I think tonight's game's awesome. I love when these two teams play each other, Seahawks and Cardinals. Two exciting quarterbacks, not a lot of defense, ton of offense. You know me. It's a game for me. It's not a game for you. A couple of 6-3 teams. Who do you like tonight?
I like Seattle. I think that Seattle, for one reason. I like Seattle for one reason. Russell Wilson. I mean, this guy has lost, 3 out of 4, I think? And he's not going to lose. I just believe that the guy's got too much about him. And Arizona's defense is good, but I think he'll have time to throw the ball. I like Arizona to do this, even though Seattle's defense is shaky. I know the thing, but I don't know. That was a huge win for Arizona last week. I mean, they are silly happy right now, right? I mean, they win that game on the last play. And by the way, that was the design play. I talked to a coach at Arizona after the game, And everybody thinks that that was just a jump ball by Kyler Murray, throw it up to DeAndre Hopkins in the end zone. It wasn't. They put, first of all, Murray is right-handed, okay? So, obviously, you don't like taking the quarterback to his left and throwing across his body. So, they put three receivers to the right side of the field. So, if you're a defensive guy, you're saying, uh-oh, all the receivers over here, he's right-handed over here, they got to be coming that way. Well, the call was a drop and roll, and they drop back, and it's different than a sprint out. They want to drop and roll. They want to just entice the defense to rush him. And then at the last minute, he scoots out. And that's what he did. The guy almost got him. He got away from him. And then if you watch it close, Larry Fitzgerald, well, I think it was the inside receiver. The play was called. He was coming across the middle of the field. And his assignment was to catch the ball and get out of bounds around the 10-yard line, probably with about 5 or 6 seconds left, which was giving him one more play. So the read was for Kyler Murray, if you don't like DeAndre Hopkins, you got Larry Fitzgerald. So it was my point is that this was not sandlot football. Cliff Kingsbury, the head coach at Arizona, I mean, this was a well-designed play. They really threw the defense off, I thought. And obviously, you got it. Players win games, not coaches. And DeAndre went up there because they actually had it defended pretty good. He threw the ball up. He was covered by two or three guys, and he went up and made the play.
Yeah, I mean, I love that detail. That's incredible. It still was a jump ball 1-on-3, though, right, at the end of the
absolutely,
day.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And the guys in front of him, they had him boxed out. It was great. That's, you know, guy made a great play. There's no question about it.
Dave, safe travels to L.A. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Will, good seeing you, buddy.
Good to see you. Enjoy your beverage.
I will.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt he's going to enjoy that beverage. Hey, Will, you shared something early in yesterday's show that I've been meaning to follow up on, and it took me basically till the end of today's show. How many baseball games in the last couple of years would you say you've watched with Jerry Reinsdorf in his skybox?
Well, it's more about when I first got here.
Okay.
Because when I first got here, I went to Summer League back in the summer of 88. And then I immediately came to Chicago, knew nobody. Lived in the Deerfield Hyatt for literally 6 weeks prior to training camp starting. That's how cheap I was. They said, hey, we'll let you stay here for about 6 to 8 weeks. And I stayed there every single day until they kicked me out. And
respect.
But we would work out every morning at 10 a.m. and I'd be done around 2 or 3. Like I said, I didn't know anybody. Guys had families. And Jerry said from day one, you know, if you ever want to come to a game, you call me. And I called him and he was like, yeah, come on down. So I used to drive from the north side through the city, through the traffic, and go to the games. And, you know, he is a diehard fan, but what he doesn't like is a lot of distractions. He wants to watch the game. So if you're going to come sit in his box, he wants you to watch the game. And I used to go and watch the games with him and talk baseball. And I've been doing that since 1988. And there were times where it was just me and him.
Man.
Talking baseball,
okay,
watching the Sox.
I got some follow-up questions on those experiences. We'll do that to end the show with Will Perdue next on The Score.
And now, the man. From Vanderbilt, 7 foot, Will Perdue.
He's got to be one of the two or three greatest human beings that I have ever known.
So as we wrap up this two-day extravaganza with Will Perdue on the Danny Parkin Show, and I've genuinely enjoyed this, Will. This has been a lot of fun, and I appreciate you doing it. Something always bothered me as a Bulls fan. And I feel like you have a very particular set of insights that you could offer up here. You've watched a lot of baseball with Jerry Reinsdorf. You know Jerry Reinsdorf. Yet you were a Bull. It always bothered me. Was the Bulls were my favorite team as a kid. The notion was, like the idea was, after the dynasty, so between like 99 and 04, before the White Sox won their World Series, it was that Jerry would trade all six Bulls championships for one White Sox World Series. That he loved baseball that much, that he cared about the White Sox that much more than the Bulls. And I always was like, that's so disrespectful to Michael and to Scotty and the Bulls. I know he's a baseball guy. I know baseball's his passion. He can do whatever he wants. They own his teams. But is that true? Like, is it that much more so? Like, are the Bulls such an afterthought that he would have traded your guys' dynasty for one White Sox World Series?
And the reason why I hesitate, because, you know, as I got to know Jerry, and that question has been asked to me many times, there was a time there where I truly thought that that might be the case as, you know, the White Sox continued to, and I don't want to say struggle, they had good years, especially after, let me go backwards, especially after what happened in, what was the year, was it 91 when they had the strike, the lockout? 94, sorry. Because I remember, you know, the great thing about training camp was that always meant that the playoffs started for baseball. And I remember there were a bunch of us, you know, we convinced Phil to have the second practice earlier so we could go to the playoff game that night. And we all practiced and hustled down and caught a playoff game. And then, my understanding was that the White Sox were one of the favorites to win the World Series that year.
Yep.
And then, bam, the season ended. And how – and listen, that was tough. You think about Jerry as an owner to do that knowing that his team was one of the favorites. You know, he's stalwart. He stood with the owners. And I had a period there where I truly felt like maybe, until he actually did that, there was some thought that, you know, I had to be reminded about that. I did think that. I was like, you know, because when I talk to Jerry, I feel the disappointment. I hear it in his voice about, you know, trying to figure out a way to get these Sox across the finish line. You know, and somebody, I never thought that until somebody brought it up. And I was like, I'm curious. I think he might actually do that.
Ugh.
But then as I got to know him, though, that was just an assumption that I made. But as I got to know him, I said, you know what? He wouldn't do that. He would consider it. But at the end of the day, he wouldn't do it. And so people understand about Jerry, and I've told this story many times. You know, let's take the family equation out of it, okay? One of the most disappointing days of his life was when the Brooklyn Dodgers left. That's how big of a baseball guy he is. That's how he grew up. And he's always told me stories because I always ask him about how he became such a big baseball nut. And, you know, I mean, I get it. I grew up and I skipped school to go to spring training down in Florida and get back then it was the Big Red Machine. And I remember one of the biggest days of my life was when I actually got Johnny Bench and Pete Rose on the same basketball. I got their autograph. I threw it over the fence and they caught it and they signed it and they threw it back over. And I was like, holy, I got Johnny Bench and I got Pete Rose on the same baseball. I mean, I was done. I couldn't fathom that. But there's a pitcher in Jerry's suite. And I think you said you've done the tour, right?
Tanny's done the tour.
Yeah. Is it the hand signed note from Jackie Robinson? Is that what you're about to mention?
No, there's a black and white photo of the Brooklyn Dodgers waving to the fans as they leave the dugout for the last time. That was their last game in Brooklyn, and that's one of his most prized possessions. It's not a huge picture. It's pretty small, and it's on one of the walls, but I remember asking him about this, and he just, I mean, even when he talks about it, he kind of stops for a second because he always, then he goes into about how, you know, I think back then it cost a quarter to get into a baseball game and how his dad wouldn't even give him a quarter. He had to figure out how to go to make a quarter so that he could go to the game, but also why he was at the game, one of those guys keeping score and the whole thing. Which, you know, it's just, that's how he became such a baseball fan, and that's what he wanted to do.
Hand side note from Jackie Robinson sounds pretty good, Tanny. Look at you trying to jump cut his story.
Oh, no, just, you know, been up there. Oh, I know that's all.
Hey, listen, man, that's one of awesome many things he's got in that he's got in his suite. I mean, that's, you walk in his suite, and if you've never been in there,
yeah, Danny, you like would know.
I've taken, you know, my brother-in-law, and I mean, I turn around and I'm like, how come they're not watching the game? And guys are they're just looking at all the stuff on the wall, like, wow, this is cool, this is cool. This, hey, I'm like, you know, there's a game going on. Yeah, I'll be there in a minute. This is cool. This is cool. And that's just, there are certain things in Jerry's life, most of them baseball related, plus, you know, the Bulls championships as well. But, you know, that's just, that's who he is. That's the elk that he was brought from. I mean, it's just that that's, yep. And that's, I guess you could say that's about as old school as you could get.
Will, I hope you had fun, man. Thank you very much for doing this.
I had a blast, and I appreciate you allowing me to come on and join you. I hope that the people that listen felt like they learned a little something. You know, I hope that Shane wins his game so he can come and brag about it tomorrow, even though he's already left for the night. But I will say this, man. You do a good job, all right? And sometimes I have a tendency to give you a hard time. I know others give you a hard time. But you're in this business for a reason, all right? Thank you. I don't want to say I don't want to sit here and say, oh, he's found his niche. I want people to understand that you put in the time and you put in the effort. You do not just show up at 2 o'clock and flip the switch. You got to, I mean, this job takes work. And I know a lot of people listening, like I get people talking about what I do on TV. Oh man, I can do that. Like, I know you think you can do that, and I know there's millions of people out there that think they can do radio, but 4 hours a day, 5 days a week takes a lot of time, takes a lot of investment, and it takes a lot of sacrifice, and I think you do a good job. Listen, I know you don't necessarily get along with the guys that work for you, but that's not how – you don't need to.
They don't work for me. We work together, and we have a very good, very dysfunctional afternoon show family. Will, thank you very much. We will do this again. Nick Shepkowski, our executive producer, thank you, sir. Shane Reardon doesn't get thanked because he left 45 minutes to go play softball. Chris Tannehill makes it sound better than we are each and every day. I believe Joe Ostrowski is coming up next. So
Bears All Access.
Oh, I apologize. Bears All Access is coming up next. My name is Danny Parkins. That's Will Perdue. This is the Danny Parkins Show on The Score.
And this holiday happy hour was brought to you by DrinkWorks Home Bar by Keurig, the gift of the year.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.